And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today is Mike Gregg. This episode, we're going to discuss the disappointing 1-0 loss for Fulham against Aston Villa at Villa Park. Mike was there, and he's going to walk us through what went wrong there. And there's a good amount to discuss in this match, but before we do anything, I always have to welcome my co-host back to the show. Mike, how you doing, my friend?
Yeah, hi, Russ. Yeah, doing okay. Looking forward to spending time speaking about yesterday's game. But then I'm not really sure what we're going to do for the next 55 minutes. But, we can look at other aspects of the club and what's going on. But, disappointing day yesterday. But looking forward to sort of picking over the bones of it.
Sure, absolutely, Mike. It's funny, I was just telling you off air that I watched back this morning the replay, and you and I talked. This was a pretty even match, and there aren't that many huge moments to talk about. Unfortunately, a mistake by Fulham was the difference in this match. But let's just start here. Just give me your overall thoughts of what you watched at Villa Park yesterday, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty – I used the word turgid when I sent you a message. I mean, it was – for me, it was very much a midfield sort of game. I mean, Villa had the more chances. You know, I mean, we can all see we didn't have enough shots and had nothing on target, really. And so they would have edged it in that sense. But, so, you know, we had a lot of the ball, but it wasn't really going anywhere. And I thought midfield – did not help itself at all. And when I talk about midfield, I'm talking about the attacking midfield. Felt a bit sorry for Martin at times. He made a lot of good runs, but the ball wasn't delivered. But, it was an okay away performance right up until that mistake. But the problem is, you know, for those who have watched the replay and were there yesterday, you will have seen that there were a good three or four times where we got ourselves in a mess at the back and you were panicking. And, and it involved, whether it involved Button, Sigerson, Parker, you know, everyone with pass backs, all too close and not giving players enough time. And, it was coming and coming and coming. And in the end, it wasn't one of the worst ones. It was just a dreadful first touch. But we can, we'll talk about the goal later. But, yeah, it's disappointing. I really had high hopes when I woke up yesterday morning. I was quite confident, and Villa were there. It's 3 points dropped, absolutely. Not even 1 point dropped, it's 3 points dropped.
Okay, excellent there, Mike. And I'm glad that you started by talking about the warning signs. I'm going to call them warning signs because when I watched the match, and I think I messaged you, every time Button had the ball at his feet, I was cringing, even though I knew what was going to happen later on. I could see the warning signs early on just watching it. And then, like you said, it just wasn't him. It looked so uncomfortable for the defense whenever Button had the ball. I guess you could say I could see it coming, but I knew it was coming because I knew the result. But to actually watch it and see it play itself out, it was hard to watch because it was all there on display, like you said. The other thing that you talked about is also interesting because one of the other things that I noticed, Mike, is the passing, the players not being on the same page yet. I think part of this, Mike, has to do with them just not playing enough with each other. I noticed a lot of passes that there just wasn't much of continuity. Like the players just didn't know where each other were going to be. And I think that comes in time. So I'm curious your thoughts on that because I saw them trying some interesting passing, but it just didn't come off. And I think part of that is lack of experience of playing together.
Well, yeah, we can say that. But, you know, this was the third game in a week. It was pretty much the same, you know, front four or five who have been, you know, playing together. Aluko, Pearson, Johansson, Martin have all been there, you know, over these three games, Parker as well. And, you know, the old average position, Russ, I don't know if you've looked at that. But
I've seen it. You know, I've seen it.
Oh, dear me. I mean, we moaned about Simons when he, with some of his teams with no whip, but anyone wants to go on the Fulham website, look at the lineup, look at the average position. and I'm not kidding, but you have six players pretty much in the center circle, and I mean that's just ludicrous. And I think that was one of the problems, is that the passing, the two goals we scored against Barnsley last week, we spoke about, were from the back, you know, very quick passing, get the ball forward quickly, and there was space between the players. Yesterday, it's all too close, and it's, you know, you have it, you're 4 yards away, no, but give it back to me. And a couple of times where Button, you know, we put Button in, and I would say we put him in problems. There was one in particular in the first half, I remember, between Parker.
Oh, it was terrible. Sigerson, I know what you're talking about.
Button,
go ahead.
Yep. Over on the right-hand side, and it was just get rid of it, just. You know, I apologize for swearing, but that's what it was like. Just get rid of the bloody thing. And
yeah.
I'm all for keeping the ball. As people know, I much prefer to keep the ball. And yes, okay, Leicester won the league last year with 20% whatever they had possession. But that's a fluke. The fact is, six of the top 10 teams in the championship, you know, the top six teams are in the top 10 possession. You know, it's that kind of league. You need to keep the ball, but it's what you do with it. And you can overplay it at the back. And yesterday, and pretty much all season, we've seen that, you know, he wants to use whoever the goalkeeper is as the sort of sweeper, as the fifth defender. But I have to say, our defenders and midfielders, because I count, you know, include Parker and McDonald, do not help Button or Jeanrin when he plays. With the type of balls they give back, you know, under hit, not enough pace on them, or, you know, they all know what their favoured left foot is, so that's where you're meant to put the ball, so that they can get a clean hit. But, in fact, I mean, we'll talk about the goal now, if you don't mind, Russ, because I watched it just before we came on. Now, we do have the ball in their half. It's over on the far left-hand side. McDonald has it, and we're a bit hemmed in there. He gives it back to Maddle, and Maddle gives it back to him, and then he gives it back to Maddle. And then Maddle plays the ball back. Now, it's an okay back pass. It could have been hit a bit harder, I think, but, you know, there was no strike or anyone, you know, 10 yards close to Button. So it was a decent ball. But it's Button's touch. I don't know what he was trying to do. I mean, the ball comes here, just stop it. He's obviously trying to put it on his left foot. And he hits, it's like hitting a brick wall, just bounces off him. And of course, they win the ball back, and, you know, they break away, get the cross in. And it's a good finish, but I'd also question Sigerson. Why didn't he, you know, head the ball? Why didn't he make a challenge more on the striker? So, you know, throughout the game, it almost looked, oh God, we're going to give him a mistake. And lo and behold, that's what happened. And how many goals have we conceded this week? We've conceded 5 goals. And 4 of them have been really, you know, mistakes. 2 penalties, the back pass to which Button did. And then last week, you could argue Tim Ream for the first goal with his bad pass. And the thing is, Maddle, everyone's been screaming for Maddle. Why is Ream playing? Maddle comes in. If that had been Ream yesterday who played that back pass, he would have got absolutely slaughtered. And, you know, I think, it really is a toss of a coin at the moment between Maddle and Ream, or even Sigerson now, because I wasn't overly impressed with him yesterday either. So very, very disappointing, giving away goals, really silly mistakes. And this goes back to what we were talking about the other night, Russ. We have to improve up top and at the back if we're going to challenge. And unfortunately, you know, these 3 games have only given us 4 points. And although we've gained on the 6th place by a point, it's 2 steps forward, 1 step back all the time, and that sort of horizon where the playoffs is just keeps getting further and further away in some ways.
No, Mike, listen, you know, you and I talked about this. You wanted, you know, in the perfect world, you wanted 9 points, at least 6 points, 2 wins, and here you have 4 points. So you're obviously 2 points behind even the bare minimum. And yes, like you said, they gained a point from where they were a week ago, but they're going to have to string some wins together. They're going to have to start figuring this out, or like you said, it's going to get worse and worse, and they're going to have to really be fighting just to be in the conversation for the top six. Like you said, 5 points is kind of on the edge. They have a lot of work to make up with some tough matches coming up. So I understand everyone's frustration. I'm frustrated as everyone else is. And watching this was frustrating because, like you mentioned, Mike, this was a self-inflicted mistake that could have been avoided, but it keeps happening over and over again. At some point, you have to learn from your mistakes, Mike, and they keep on making silly errors that always seem to cost them. But this one, I think you're going to agree, Mike, we could see coming because there were warning signs earlier in the match, and just unfortunately happened around the 80th minute. All right, my friend, go ahead, Mike.
I was just going to say that, Jokanović has come in for a lot of criticism, and we can talk about a couple of polls I've done later on, if you like.
Oh, but, please do, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, he's coming for a lot of criticism, but, his post-match comments, which you're going to mention, do not sort of shed any light on he's going to change his ways because it doesn't look like he's going to, But I think sometimes a manager has to look at the actual players he's got, and for the most part, we can do what he wants, maybe not consistently, but we can do what he wants. But there is a real, real issue at the back in what he's asking our defenders and defensive midfielders and Button and possibly Bettinelli if he comes in next week. Because those goalkeepers just not up to it. They're just not up to it. They are not, Bettinelli's worse on the floor than Button is with regards actually controlling the ball and getting, making a decent pass or fist of it. So there's going to need to be a little bit of a change there. And I think it will be a mistake by Jokanović if he doesn't, look at that and make it just a little tweak. Just, more row X if you have to, keeper. Don't overplay it.
I agree, Mike. I totally agree. And that's something that I hope he does. Like I was talking to you earlier, I was talking to Emilio, and he was saying to me that he feels that Jokanović wants us to play like Pep Guardiola is playing how is his team playing at Manchester City, and play from the back. And it works for Manchester City, but they've been having a few problems themselves. Even Barcelona has problems when teams figure them out, but sometimes you need to make changes, and I'm just going to – I've asked you this offline, and I want to ask you again. Do you think we've become a little predictable with how we're playing, that maybe at some point, when he first came to us, we knew he was someone that made adjustments, that wasn't afraid to change the formation. Do you think that maybe he's hell-bent with this style that he's not willing to change when maybe he should be, Mike?
Yeah, one of the things I've been disappointed with Jokanović this season is last season we saw him chop and change formations, and I'm not talking about the players, but just, and that was the reputation he came with, that he's somebody who during the game and also game to game will, play three at the back, will play four, will play one up top, play three up top. So, but he seems to have decided that he's going to play every game with certainly only one main striker, and then a combination of those five midfielders, be it two sitting, be it one sitting, whatever ways. But McDonald's been out, and then we had a really good performance last week, and we went to the two defensive midfielders yesterday, and they were defensive. They did sit. And, we saw a pretty stale attacking performance, and I think, if you're going to go to teams like Villa, if this is what he's going to do, set up, because this is how we're set up when we've gone to play at Wigan and other places, and it doesn't create enough chances. It may hold a game very steady, but as we saw last week at Barnsley, with Johansson next to Parker, he has more legs, but with Parker and McDonald, there's nowhere for him to go, and it's just they're 5 to 10 yards away from each other all the time. And we've become predictable with the personnel, I think, even more. People see Parker and, managers will see Parker and McDonald playing, and they will know exactly what they're going to get from those two. Whereas other players maybe, just gives a bit of unpredictability. And, you know, so I think he, again, this is something else he needs to look at. Two key players, you know, two players who can be really important for us. But together, I'm just, every game, I just get less and less convinced by it.
No, good point there, Mike. And it's funny because I was thinking about some of the words that he said, and I'm going to be reading some quotes from him in just a few minutes, about, you know, about how he wants Fulham to play. He uses the word brave. He wants his players to be brave. And basically, I'm paraphrasing, be aggressive. You know, take the game to the opponent. But is he being a little, you know, a little bit of both, trying to be both conservative but also aggressive, because he has these two holding midfielders? It's almost like he's not letting them go the entire way, because it's like he's sending mixed messages, Mike. Instead of going all out to be brave, to be aggressive, he's also having them set up to be a little bit conservative. Am I off base on this?
No, you're not. But I also think, you know, I think he's looking for aggression in the fact that as the game's played, he wants these players hassling and making their tackles. You know, it's not the aggressive sort of, you know, we're going to attack and bombard everyone with balls. I think his meaning of the word brave actually goes back to when we had Tignar's manager, and his first season, first and second season, was a no-blame culture, which is he would not accept players having a go at other players if they made a mistake. If they tried something that didn't work, then no one would get the blame. It's because he said, you know, go out, this is the way I want you to play. If you make a mistake, you make a mistake, that's fine. No one is going to have a go at you from the players or anything else. I will deal with anything like that. So that no-blame culture, and I think that's, in a way, is what Jurcanovic wants. So he says to someone like Button, you know, I want you to control the ball. I don't want you hoofing the ball forward or into the stand, you know, which is the easy option. I want you to gamble, you know, be brave and try and control it and look to find another white shirt. So I think that's his meaning of the word brave. Now, I might be completely wrong, but I think that's what he's looking for. So he's looking for players to express themselves and keep the ball and be confident. But then on the other hand, they're not gambling on running into the box. We spoke the other day about,
right,
it's good to see Johansson a bit more forward and get in the box. Well, yesterday was we took so many steps back yesterday from the last two games. You know, there were loads of times that we got into wide positions. Now, the crosses could have been better, absolutely. But I looked in the box and there was only Martin. And, you know, where are the other guys? Where are these other midfielders? And that's because I'm looking back and I'm seeing Parker and McDonald still on the halfway line. So that is, you know, so that is where I really think that 10%, which I'm looking for in the forward positions, is they have to gamble more. And gamble by taking on players when they've got the ball, and then also making those runs, you know, run to the near post, far post, you know, late run into the box, whatever way you want to do it. But give the people who are wide, when they have it, an option, because a lot of the times there was only Martin there, and it's, you know, against four defenders, what chance has he got if the ball actually gets in there?
It's a great point, Mike, because it's funny. One of the things that I noticed while watching the match, the approach by both teams, especially in the first half, when I would see Fulham, you know, pass sideways, pass backwards, you know, eventually try to get the ball forward. On the flip side, when Villa had the ball, they would be running with pace. They would be getting crosses, and we did too. But it just seemed that Ayew and on the other side, Kodja, this is in the first half, had much more purpose with pace than we did. You know, they were being, I guess you could say, what you're talking about, being more brave. They were being more brave. They were running at us. You know, it's not that they played this great game. You and I already talked about it. I don't think Aston Villa were this team that was head and shoulders better than Fulham. In fact, I think it was pretty even. But I could see a difference in their attack compared to ours, Mike. Theirs had more purpose.
They did, and I never felt in trouble. That's the thing. I thought, you know, defensively facing them, I don't think they really created that much. You know, a couple of saves, but you know, and a number of shots, but it pretty speculative, some of it. So I never felt, oh, they've got loads of pressure, we're in real trouble here. And that's the disappointment. Like, you know, they're not a bad side, but they're not a good side either. And speaking to some Villa fans, you know, Bruce has already sort of tightened them up and made them harder. And I think we found that, you know, we did struggle to break them down. But again, I put it back to, I really feel the ills of the team at the moment are that Parker McDonald combination. I just think everyone sorted them out, and we can't get them both working. It's the old Lampard and Gerrard issue in the centre of midfield. Two very similar players in many ways, and I think it's I think it's devaluing the team a little bit.
Okay, very good there, Mike. All right, I'm now going to go and I'm going to read the comments from Slavisa, from the head coach reaction, because I think they kind of go with a little bit of what you've been talking about. Your comment about being brave and basically trying to express the players to express themselves. I'm going to read this because it sounds like he's backing his players, and I want to get your thoughts on this. So, again, this is right on the Fulham website. These are quotes from Slavisa. Quote, "We've given many presents in the championship," he stated. "We made one big mistake today and paid a very expensive price. After the cross, Kadra smashed the goal very well. Credit to him. It's not easy to score this kind of goal. At the end, we are disappointed. We had possession of the ball. We did many important things. But it's true that we didn't create enough chances. David Button was a regular outlet for his side, and while his head coach admitted the goalkeeper was perhaps overused as an option to pass to, he refused to condemn him after his wayward clearance led to the only goal of the game." Here's another quote from Slavisa. Quote, "I encourage my team to play with the keeper, but today sometimes it was not necessary to play it to the keeper," Slavisa explained. "I don't blame my keeper. We played very well for first 45 minutes, but we didn't play behind Aston Villa in the second half. We tried to fix the problem, but Aston Villa pushed us without the ball, pressed us, and won the game with muscle, and won the game without the ball. We weren't solid enough. We showed less ambition and lack of concentration. We didn't play with enough personality second half, and we paid a very expensive price." Excuse me. Once again, Fulham cruised the possession stakes, but Jokanović is keen to see his side add more of an edge to their game. Here's another quote from Slavisa. Quote, "I like to have possession of the ball. I like trying to dominate the game, but it's necessary to be solid, strong. Following is part of football. Aston Villa today are a team who use these rules very well, and we have to be stronger. This is the championship. This is England. And we have to know where we are. Sometimes we're a little bit confused." Okay, Mike, I'm going to bring you back on there, my friend. All right, my friend, what did you make of the comments from Slavisa Jokanović? It sounds like he's backing his goalkeeper, David Button, but it also goes to your point about ambition, creativity. He didn't use that word. I can't remember the word that he used. But I think you're on to something, Mike. I think he wants them to be more brave in the way that they play.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's I certainly said after the game yesterday I'll be shocked if Bettinelli wasn't in the team next week. But, within half hour, Jokanović has come out with his post-match comments and backed him, because that's what he's telling his keeper to do. And in the end, it does go back to what I just said about him being brave and no blame. And he's just following the old following orders thing. So, if Bettinelli comes in, he's going to be asked to do the same thing if Jokanović is not going to make a change in that position. And I think when he says second half, we didn't get behind him, he's right. Villa were a better side second half. There is no doubt. I think they threatened a lot more. And but first off, we were fine. But, I'm jumping ahead here, Russ, but 289 attacking passes we had. But really, were any of them that worthwhile? So we were getting into position. We were getting 30, 25, 30 yards out, but we just weren't finding a player. And maybe that was down to Villa defensive. Bruce has gone in and tightened them all up, and we were finding it hard to get past them, especially second half. So maybe it was them who made a slight tactical change. And they made a couple of subs as well. And, maybe we struggled in dealing with that. But, it's they created more shots. We just, it's back to, you know, no shots on target, which is horrendous. And I don't believe it's got anything to do with only having one striker up front. It's all coming from the midfield. They're the ones who have got to feed the striker or, you know, run on for the striker to lay off to. So we're just not creating enough in that, in yesterday's game, unlike the last two.
No, good point there, Mike. I think I'm there. Well, I'm there with you. I shouldn't say I think I'm there with you. I'm there with you that really the problem starts in midfield. And let's not talk about Steve Bruce because maybe we're going to learn something here. I think we might, especially what happened in the second half. This is what Steve Bruce said after the match. This is on the Aston Villa website. On the victory, here are quotes from Steve Bruce. Quote, I like the clean sheet, and I'm delighted for everyone concerned, especially the players who have had a tough time. When the supporters get behind them, it's some roar. They were delighted with the response in the second half. We went 10 or 15 yards further up the pitch and got after them better. All credit to all concerned because that's been a good week. On getting better, here are some more quotes. Of course, I want us to improve. There's a long way to go. We were better in the second half. We moved up the pitch. But Fulham are a good side. They were unbeaten away from home, and you can see why. They didn't really cause us any problems defensively, but they keep the ball in deep areas. When you do that, the crowd demands you to get after it, and the second half, we did that. So, Mike, it sounds like to me at halftime, again, I'm not in there, but it sounds like he must have said something to them, a strategy at second half to really get after us and get farther up the pitch, because I could see that watching it. You probably saw that in person as well.
Yeah, they certainly pressed us more, and you know, the game was very, 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 you know, a lot more in our half. And you know, but then, you know, if they're pushing forward on us, we need to be getting the pacier guys to run beyond their defence. But you know, again, that didn't really work. I mean, Johansson was almost playing as a second, you know, as the second striker at times. And really, I'd prefer, you know, somebody like Aiti or you know, go back to a normal striker like Woodrow or someone up there. For all Johansson's running, he's, you know, he's not a striker. So you know, he's a, whatever your own personal feelings are about Bruce as a manager, he's experienced, he knows what's going on, and he knows how to set a team up and react to what's happening in the game. And you know, Villa will progress. They won't, I'll quite happily say they're not going to make the playoffs, but they will end up probably around eighth or ninth because they still have some issues. But they're not a walkover, but they're going to be a typical Bruce side, you know, 0-0, 1-0, somewhere around there, and get a lot of draws as they already have.
Okay, very good there, Mike. All right. You know what? I usually go to first half and second half observations. Mike, I don't know if there's much I could really give to you to talk about what happened in the first half. The only thing Fulham related was at the end of the first half when we had a little bit of pressure on them. We had the opportunity by Aluko, but that wasn't called a shot on target. But he did test the goalkeeper there. Beyond that, Mike, there really wasn't a hell of a lot. How would you describe the first half?
Well, I've sort of said I thought it was fairly even. Yes, again, you know, outshot, but I thought we were doing okay and going 0-0 at Villa. It was, you know, keeping the unbeaten run going and playing okay, and I really didn't feel under any pressure at all. I felt very comfortable at half time, and you know, we had a little bit of a spell there the last few minutes, but you know, that didn't really go into the second half, and Villa did step it up. And the next time we had any kind of pressure was when we were 1-0 down and Kearney and Aiti came on, and
that's right,
you know, we had a good last, you know, 5 minutes plus injury time. But, you know, a couple of free kicks I thought we wasted, or we could have done a bit better. But, you know, we had a number of corners as well. So it's a pity we didn't get anything out of them. But that was it, really. The end of each half, we had a bit of a chance. And but not enough to, you know, to get that one chance, that one shot on goal, which is just, you know, we should have got. And if we'd come away with a draw, it would have been deserved, but, you know, the game was there to be won.
It was, Mike. And let's now move to the second half, because we've already talked about what Steve Bruce said, it sounds like he was instructing his players to get farther up the pitch, and they certainly were doing that. They were pressing Fulham a great deal, and we were and more of the play was in our half. But we did have an opportunity early on off of a corner. Michael Maddow unfortunately did not get on the ball in the 47th minute. That was an opportunity, but again, nothing came of it. I mentioned to you this off air. I think this was a factor because this also talks about playing with width and pace, Mike. When they brought on Albert Odoma early on, I think it was the 55th minute, I think this made a change to the match. This is just my opinion based on what I just watched. They brought him on, they took off Christie, then they moved Kaja up top central. And now you had all kinds of width and pace because you had Odoma on one side, you have IU on another, and now you have Kaja, who also has pace up front. And I think that made a difference to what Villa were doing. That's just my opinion. But nothing really happened up until, like I said, up until the mistake. You also had Ross McCormack coming on later on in the match as well. I just want to mention that. But you have the mistake, Mike. We've already talked about that in the 80th minute. Kaja scores off of the cross from Albert Odoma. Now, honestly, we're lucky not to lose this match 2-0 because Jordan Ayew should have scored here 2 minutes later.
Yeah.
But they didn't. So thankfully it was just 1-0. Here's the thing that I really want to ask you because we've already been talking about this. He makes a change. He takes off a Luko, Mike, and he brings on Kearney and moves things around a little bit. I guess I could understand that. My question is, why didn't he bring on Aite earlier to bring on some more pace? Because I think that we were struggling with their pace. Why didn't we bring on pace earlier? And I think Floyd Aite was the one bright spot I saw late in the match, Mike. He came on at the same time with Matt Smith, and I think he made a difference, but I think it was too little too late. So those are my observations just watching replay. You were there. Just talk to me about your observations of the second half.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, the Kearney sub made sense, really. And he went over on the right-hand side, so not central. And, had a few nice touches. And like I say, McCormack come on. And I will say McCormack, there were a couple of boos, but I'm not going to, dwell on that. He got a very good reception from the fans and, a nice round of applause. He didn't do that much while he was on, and if anything, he was quite subdued. His body language was the body language I never liked to see last year at times, So I'm not sure he's a happy bunny there. But anyway, I mean, we were, Aite, he's been out injured. It might have been a case of, he's only good for like 15, 20 minutes. And the thing was, he was actually, you could see that certainly there was going to be a Fulham substitution. I couldn't tell if it was Aite or Smith who was going to come on, but, leading up to the goal. So they were almost, they were stripped off and the linesman was flashing the number, couldn't quite see what it was, getting ready to make the sub. And of course we make the mistake and they go and score. So, and it was good to see Aite back on. I mean, he was a bit tricky, did a couple of, decent things. Smith, I have to say, ran around without actually contributing an awful lot. And then, it was all a bit of a mess, really. But we were actually more dangerous in the last 10 minutes when we were a mess than when we were a bit more organised. But
you're right.
But again, he left. You're chasing the game. You've gone 1-0 down. Silly mistake. And he keeps Parker and McDonald on. He takes off Johansson and Pearson, and while they may have not been playing great, those two guys have been involved in a lot of the goals we scored in the last week. So I was expecting either McDonald or Parker, one of them, to go off and Johansson maybe step back. I wouldn't have taken Pearson off. I thought he was doing okay. So a little bit disappointed in that, really. So you end up playing 4-2-4 if you like, and but with two defensive midfielders on the pitch, so that's not really going to work, is it? So, you know, they were the better side. Villa were the better side in the second half, and it was just that last 10 minutes where we actually showed anything at all. But you know, fair play to Villa in the end. They took their chance. They, like you say, they could have made it 2-0, and that would have been, you know, game over from that point, because you just couldn't see it. Well, we never scored, but you couldn't see us getting two, that's for sure.
No.
But another thing was the frustration was the bookings we got. You know, Maddell got booked for a silly foul. So did Martin. You got McDonald getting booked. You know, my dad's starting to call him a player who's just one tackle away from a red card. And I think we're going to see him go again. So a bit of petulance, I thought, from our lot in the second half. And they need to... We've had enough suspensions already this season, and we've shown we haven't, you know, quality-wise, we can't afford to be losing lots of players. So I think they need to rein that in a little bit.
No, I agree, Mike. And I forgot to mention this, and this is a classic Goldman on my part. We've gone through all of this, Mike, and I forgot to ask you your thoughts on the starting 11. And I can't believe I did that, because it kind of, I think that plays a factor in everything that we're talking about. Let's go all the way back, because I think it was a mistake. You and I have talked about this. I personally have had enough of McDonald and Parker playing together. I think they're both valuable, but I think together, I think it's way too defensive. I think it's a mistake. I think it slows us down, and I think it showed itself in this game. But when I saw that, Mike, I was like, okay, we're going to, you know, I'm not saying we were playing for a point, but we were playing way too conservative. And I was a little scared of how this was going to play out, because I thought it was going to play out exactly how you and I said in the on Friday's show, that it was going to be maybe one or two chances we would get, and that's how it played out. But I think going back to the starting 11, Mike, I think that's where I knew we were in trouble.
Well, yeah, I mean, apologies for jumping around the agenda. It's just one of those games, Russ, where, you know, there's not an awful lot of elements to the game, to, you know, incidents to talk about. So
no,
we've sort of jumped around. But yeah, I mean, go back, you know, Maddell came in. I mentioned that already. People have been calling him for, you know, to come in for Ream. He did. You got Session on coming in from Malone, which I called the other night, because I felt, you know, that's what he's going to do. He's going to mix them up. And Parker and McDonald, you know, starting again. And I've said away from home, that's better than at home, that's for sure. But, you know, I think if we ever play anyone, you know, a big side in the cup or something like that, or we were going to Newcastle, that kind of thing, then yeah, it makes sense to sit and try and hold a game and, you know, try and take a limited chances. But, you know, we're playing Villa, okay, one of the big sides in the division. They've not started well, but then they're not, you know, they haven't lost a load, you know, drawn a lot. So could we have been a bit more positive? And I think looking back, yes. And,
yes.
But I called Kearney on the bench as well, you know, and in retrospect...
You did. You got that right.
In retrospect, Kearney should have started and Johansson should have been in place of McDonald or Parker, you know, one of the two.
And, I agree, Mike. I agree.
And I'm afraid every time I see those two on the starting 11, when Fulham tweet the lineup, I will probably reply... sigh every time, because I really can't, you know, for me that's what it brings. But I think we have despite a decent at times defensive performance, we need Kallis back, and we need him back quickly.
I was going to ask you about that. Go ahead.
Yeah, we need Kallis back, and but the question is who you drop or who plays next to him. So, and I think that position, that spot is wide open, because I think if you did a poll of Sigurdsson, Maddell and Ream, I don't think Ream would win, but I think the vote would be pretty much split between those two, because I didn't think Maddell, you know, brought his A game yesterday at all, and I'm not convinced by him on the left-hand side either. And Adoree, you know, Fredericks never got a run out yesterday. You know, are we going to see Fredericks next week? You know, he's going to have another week's training under his belt.
Yeah.
So we could see, you know, three changes to the back four next week, or, you know, even a brand new back four. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see. But, yeah,
we
I mean,
could,
the rest of it picks itself. Yeah.
Right, right, the rest of it picked itself, and since we are jumping around, I want to go back and ask you about Sessegnon, because Emilio said he was one of the bright spots, and I could see where he was going on that. I want to get your thoughts about his play in this game.
Well, yeah, he was, and although I haven't published it yet, he is going to win the man of the match vote that the fans vote on by my sort of polls, and he's won it quite convincingly as well. I mean, it was an okay performance from him. He didn't do anything bad. He didn't do anything spectacular, but he was better than the others. So yeah, I mean, he is. It's hard to believe he's 16. It really is. You see him on the pitch, and he's still
very
got a
mature.
Lot to learn.
Yeah,
he's still got a lot to learn defensively. But you know, as a 16-year-old playing in that team, he doesn't look out of place. And I think we're going to see the season continue as this. You know, he'll play a couple of games, maybe then Malone will come in and keep both of them fresh.
I agree with that, and I'm not against him switching those guys around. Again, I would do the same with McDonald and Parker, Mike. We've already talked about that. Keep split the time with them. All right, let's move on. Let's now look at the stats. Let's see what we can learn from these stats. Possession, I believe at the half it was up to 70%, but the end of the match stats, it was 66% and 34%. So that tells you that obviously Villa started to get more of the possession, and definitely in the second half they had it more in Fulham's half. Total shots, this is the one that stands out to me, Mike. 16-5 in favor of Villa. Okay, this is the big one.
Yeah.
On target, Villa had 7 on target. We had 0 crosses. Fulham had 8, and Villa had 6 crosses. Aston Villa shaded this at 21-20. Tackles shaded by Villa 22-18. Attempted passes. Double for Fulham, 646 to 319. Attacking passes, this is actually close, Mike, and I think this is an interesting stat. Attacking passes, 183 for Fulham, but 131 for Aston Villa. Passing accuracy, Fulham were at 81%, and Villa were at 71%. Accurate passes, 524 to 227 in favor of Fulham. Aerial duels, way in favor of Aston Villa, 30-13 in fouls. Villa had 15, and Fulham had 11. Mike, what stands out to you from the full-time stats?
Yeah, I mean, although we had more of the ball, they won more of the game, if you like. You know, the duels, it's got, you know, they won the aerial battle, and they also won the tackling battle as well. You know, we had a couple of shots blocked. You never know with blocked shots, are they going to be on target, that kind of thing. But, yeah, I mean, you can't be outshot 16-1 or 16-0 or something and expect to come away with anything. So I think, you know, they were more fired up. They, you know, they were at home, big crowd, and they won the battles, the important battles in the middle of the pitch. Yes, we had the ball a lot, but we didn't do enough with it. So that for me is the disappointing part. You know, again, Jokanović is going on about being brave and aggression, and you were saying, what does that aggression? What's he mean by that aggression? And maybe we're looking at it there. You know, they're not winning the headers, and they're not winning the they never won the tackles yesterday. And when you've got two defensive midfielders on the pitch, that should not be the way it happens.
Very good point, Mike. It's funny because I go back and I look at the Norwich City match, and I look at the second half, and we talk about that 20-minute spell when they were first to every ball, it seemed. And then they were very aggressive. They were brave, I guess you could say, the way that Jokanović wants them to play. And in this match, they were second. They were second in the second half. Simple. They were second in the second half, like you said. They finally, unfortunately, came alive at the very end of the match, but it was too little too late. And they get beat. And honestly, you've already said this, and you and I have talked about this. Aston Villa, an average team. Mike, I think Jokanović went in here giving them way too much respect by playing those two defensive midfielders together. I think he was treating them like he would Newcastle. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's the new manager effect. I think it's the Bruce effect. And and being overawed because we're going to go and play Villa. But, you know, Villa are just a Championship side. They got relegated just like we did, just like Newcastle right. did. And you're playing that team in this league, not a Premier League team. And, yeah, we put, you know, that's probably the right way to look at it, Russ. And we have to learn from that. We have to, you know, play our own game and let teams be worried about us. But, yeah, I mean, it's important to see what we're going to learn. This week has really been a messy week. It started so well, and we've slowly, you know, the results certainly got worse. But, I mean, our performance second half against Norwich, we didn't show them any respect second half. So that's how we should be going into every game. And but maybe exactly. we lost the game before we even kicked off yesterday.
Well, that's my point, Mike. And listen, you know that I'm in favor of Slavisa. I think Slavisa is the right man for Fulham Football Club, but I'm here to tell you that I think it's fair to criticize him when I think it's warranted. I think it's fair to criticize the head coach here because I think he's sending out mixed messages. He wants them to be brave, but he sets them up with two defensive midfielders and gives the opposition way too much respect. And you just brought up a good point. Why are we playing this way where Norwich City is a much better team and he doesn't give them that respect? He takes it to them. So I'm coming off a little hot here, but I'm just disappointed, my friend, because I think we have the talent. I actually think we have the head coach. They're just not able to put it all together. They're way too inconsistent, Mike.
Well, I mean, it's about being brave. You know, there's a way to look at it. Maybe he wants, if you have two defensive midfielders plus your two wing backs, if you like, and or your four defenders, if he's then saying to the other four players, so Martin and the three midfielders, you know, there you are, there's your defensive shield. Don't worry about anything that's behind you. Play the football at the front, run at players, get the passes going, run into space, all this kind of thing. If it was a kind of, you know, we've got a handbrake on these certain players, but you guys can right. do what you like. And if that's what we were watching in all these games, then I think we could accept that. If it was a little bit gung-ho with the four, if you're going to play two defensive midfielders. But it's just not working out like that. Maybe it's
the wrong
combination of players. But, you know, so if that's what he wants, then he's going to have to translate that to the players more and, you know, get them doing what he wants, because they certainly weren't doing that yesterday.
Definitely not, Mike. And, again, I think maybe there are mixed messages here. I don't know exactly if his message is coming across or if he needs to emphasize in a stronger way exactly what he wants. If he wants, like what you said, go gung-ho up front. You've got cover back there. We have the two defensive midfielders. Then that's what they should be doing. But it just, you know, it just doesn't seem like that's what's going on there, my friend. All right. You did do a poll. Do you have the results yet of your man of the match poll, Mike? Or should I just ask you
for your man of the match? No, I can do that. So, well, I mean, my man of the match and also the poll of the fans is the same. So that's Sessegnon, followed by Parker and Aluko. And, you know, and coming at sorely bottom is Button. But disappointing scores. Maybe not as bad as I anticipated, but, you know, because like I say, overall, we did okay, and I think the fans have marked pretty fairly this week. But, it wasn't good. It wasn't dreadful, but it was just, you know, it was okay. It was average. So, yeah, Sessegnon for me was man of the match.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to do, we were talking about Jokanović, and, you know, I put a poll out this morning, a couple of polls, Russ, if you want me to talk about those now.
Absolutely. Before we rate Slavisa, we'll do that at the end. Let's talk about your polls, because they're both very interesting.
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of people writing off the chances of playoff or, you know, saying, oh, we're never going to get playoff, all this kind of stuff. And I've got to say, you know, a week ago I said we had to do X, Y, Z, and we'd still be in on it. You know, we're 5 points short of the playoffs at the moment, and we're so inconsistent. I'm having difficulty, me, Mr. Positive, having difficulty saying, yeah, we can go on a run and we can, you know, we can still do it, but I just can't see it. And I'm trying to convince myself that it's not going to happen. So I did a poll earlier today. I did a pre-season one, you know, where does everyone think people are going to finish? And about, you know, 35% thought we might make the playoffs and the rest all in other positions down the league. So I did a poll this morning on Twitter. And so far, very, very happy with this. Almost 600 votes, Russ.
Wow.
On a poll which I set up maybe 12 hours ago, very early this Sunday morning. So it's, where do you see Fulham FC finishing this season? And so 4% have said the top six, so very small number. 50% have said 7th to 12th, which is probably where I see us. I see us about 8th or 9th come the end of the season. 37% 13th to 18th, and then 9% for the last six positions. So I did say something like a season of mid-table mediocrity, and it looks like that's what it's going to be. And so we're not, you know, the fans, 65% of the fans didn't think we were going to get promoted before the season began. That's now, you know, according to this, 95-96% now. So what do you do? I followed, you know, if most fans thought we weren't going to go up, what is the feeling? You know, there's some people saying, get rid of Jokanović, he's not the right man, and we're never going to get promoted with him. We need a change, all this kind of stuff. But if your view of the season before it even started was, well, we're not going to get promoted anyway, why do you want to make the change? So I asked the second question, which is, should Jokanović get an extension for 2017-18? So basically, okay, we're not going to go up, but should Jokanović get his contract extension and take us into next season and for a push then? And I've had over 400 votes on this one, and 78% say yes. So whatever way you look at it,
wow,
that's an overwhelming majority saying that's not a Brexit vote, 52-48. That's 78% saying he should stay. So for all the whinging and the moaning and so forth from various people online and in person yesterday, the vast majority of Fulham fans are fairly sensible, can see that he's trying to do something, and now is not the time to make a change, and we need to look at the long game and, offer him an extension. Let's not write off this season. Something might happen, but if not, it's not the end of the world, and we move on to next season with a year of all these players under his tutelage, and hopefully build a much more better team for next year. It's very early in the season to write off the season, but I'm quite buoyed by that result, I have to say, Russ.
Yeah, that's actually encouraging, Mike, because that's kind of where I'm at this. You know, again, listen, I said 5th at the beginning of the season. Looks like the odds are against me, and I'll be the first to admit it. I can see now where you are, 8th to 12th. I can see that. That seems more realistic. But your vote is actually encouraging to me, because I think that we need to hold on to him. And I was thinking about this, and I think it's a good to end the show talking about Slavisa. And I'm going to pose this to you. A year ago, we have Kit. I believe we had more points at this point than we do now, Mike. But here's the thing. Ask yourself, not just by the points, but what you watched last season at this time compared to this season. Are we a better team now? And I ask that question a couple ways, Mike. Not just the talent, because I think the talent's better. But we used to complain under Kit, Mike, that there was no style. There was no Fulham way. There was no style under Kit. I think we are now seeing that there's a style, meaning that I think that there's a way forward, whereas I didn't see that under Kit. That's my opinion. I'm curious your thoughts on where we are now compared to where we were a year ago. You know, again, I think if you look at it points-wise, like I said, I think we're behind, but I think we're better off now.
Yeah, well, I said I think the club will look at things come the Brentford game. That would be almost a year to the day since they sacked Simons, because he was behind target. And I, you know, unless we win the next two games, I suspect we're going to be behind target at the end of the Brentford game. And the question there for the club is, do they treat this, you know, do they treat Jokanović with the same, you know, with the same set of rules as they did with Simons? And I think the poll today certainly shows that the majority of Fulham fans think, you know, we should continue. And it's very easy. I mean, I do it. You know, I do it as well. I compare year on year. And the fact is, it's a completely different league, different team.
Yeah.
What different, about you? You know, different hurdles to go over. And one of the things, you know, and I'm doing something at the moment, looking at projecting the season for, you know, the rest of the season. The league at the moment is so condensed. I mean, there is a 2-point gap, you know, from 22 to 20. And then it's like 20, 19, 18, 76. You know, everyone's picking up points. And, you know, we are, you know, we're 14th, I think. And really, we should be in sort of, you know, 10th with those kind of points. And, you know, because everyone's beating each other. So everyone's points is being shared out. And I look back on a week, you know, I said, we were 6 points behind before we played Barnsley of sixth place. We're now 5 points behind, and that's from only a win and a draw. So during the week, the results went our way for us to actually make a step forward. But somehow today we're all talking about, oh, we've gone backwards, we're never going to get promotion. So it's a very weird league this year. So I don't think you can compare points per game, if you like, year on year. You can only look at the individual players. And we have played some really, really good football this year, much better than even under Simons when they played well. We have better players. You know, they're not all firing, and some of them have disappeared. You know, where was Cabano and where's Hozabad?
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to know what's happened with those two. But, you know, they are skillful players, and Jokanović has to get the most out of them because we've spent a lot of money on them as well. So if we're in a position in January and he goes to the moneyman and says, you know, I need another 4 million because I want this player, and they turn around and say, well, we gave you 4 million for Hozabad and you're not even playing him, what's going on? You know, so he needs to get them firing as well. But yeah, I truly believe we are a better, I asked the question somewhere today and never got many responses, but are we in a position as a club better than we were a year ago? And I believe we are.
As soon as you
ask that question, people go on about the owner and blah blah this and the stats man and everything else. But the fact is, we have a better manager, we have better players, we are playing better football at times. And yes, there are still lots of things to work on, but I believe we have a better grounding for us to push on, be it this season if we can, if not certainly into next year.
Mike, I'm right there with you, and I'm glad that you brought up the table, because I'm looking at it right now, and I was talking to Emilio about this as well. If you look at some of the teams that are ahead of us, and only by a point or two, you have Queen's Park Rangers that is just a point ahead of us, and listen, that was an opportunity lost there. Then you have Barnsley, who we beat. We haven't played Brentford yet. Then you have Leeds United. I think Fulham are a better team than Leeds United. Here's the one that surprised me. Now, it's only 2 points, but Preston North End are ninth, Mike. And I think Fulham are a much better side than Preston North End. It's a very tight league, and that's why I wanted to bring that up as well. And I'm glad that you brought it up. It could go either way. You know, again, we could be, like I said, we could be eighth. We could be 12th. We could be 14th. It's that tight. And I think it's, you know, I think it could be like this for a while, but the opportunity is there. I don't think the season is a write-off just yet because, like you said, every year is a little bit different, and this year everyone's beating everyone. Everyone's getting points. I shouldn't say everyone's beating everyone. Everyone's getting points. So this could be tight for a while. So they could be in it longer than normal, and it gives them an opportunity. All right, my friend. Before we go, I definitely want your thoughts on Slavica in this match. So rate Slavica for this match. Mike, you with me? Did I lose you? I think I might have lost Mike.
No, I'm here. I'm sorry, I muted myself, Russ.
Okay,
sorry.
Not a problem.
Talking to myself.
That's okay.
Yeah, so rating Yakanovic. Well, I think he did get the selection of Parker and that wrong. I think he did probably go into defensively. We played okay, and then maybe he could have made better subs. So I'm going to give him quite a low score this week. I'm going to give him a 4. I'm going to praise him when we do well, but yesterday we could have got away with it, but there were issues in his decision making, definitely.
I totally agree with that, Mike. I think that's a fair rating for this match. Like you said, if he does well, he gets the praise. If he doesn't, he gets the criticism. It's the way it works, and I think he deserves the criticism in this match. I'm glad that you did that, and I criticized him as well during this match, and I think he deserves it. The players deserve it as well, obviously, because they're implementing what he wants to do. But there were decisions made that I don't think were good ones, and I think they played factors in this loss, my friend. All right, great show. I know it's hard talking about a loss, especially one like this where there aren't that many key moments to talk about. But believe it or not, Mike, I think this is a very interesting show. Regardless, we've been talking for over an hour, so we must have done something right here.
Well, I mean, yeah, sometimes it's just about talking about what's going on. So there was a game, things happened, we lost. But there's maybe bigger pictures and some things that we got to talk about. And, maybe it's a turning point yesterday. It's a game that we should have got something out of it. And we've now got a week before we play Huddersfield. We've got a horrible run of games against teams in the top end of the table. So
sure do.
We are either going to be in a very good position at the end of November, or we are going to be in trouble.
I've seen the run of fixtures coming up, Mike. You're 100% right there. All right, my friend. Final thoughts before we go.
Yeah, I think it's a week where, I'd hoped he'd done some work during the international break, and they came out, got a great result, decent performance second half against Norwich. But we reverted to type yesterday. So they need to look at what has caused that. And for me, there's two things he needs to do. Dump the Parker McDonald access. And secondly, have a change in the way they deal with the pass backs to the keeper or the instructions that he's giving his goalkeepers, because it's causing us more problems than it's worth, I think.
Okay. Very interesting there, Mike. My final thoughts involve, like you said, this lead up to the Huddersfield Town match. This is a chance to do a little self-evaluation. Team had that opportunity in the international break, but I think this is another opportunity. Like you said, this could be a turning point. I think that Savisa and his coaching staff need to look at the players and evaluate them again going into this week, but also do some self-evaluating, evaluate the job that they're doing and how they can do it better, and how they can improve. Learn from your mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes. I think this is a good week to learn from them. That would be my advice. Not that Savisa is going to be asking for my advice, but if I was to give him advice, it would be just to do a little self-evaluation and be honest with yourself and be honest with what's going on and see if you can do things better. That would be my advice to Savisa Jokanović. But I have a funny feeling he won't be listening to me. All right, Mike. Again, thank you so much, my friend. Very, very good show. You were great. And I hope to be talking to you soon, my friend.
Yeah, no problem. Have a good week. And, two important games coming up. But got a whole week to work on them. And, let's hope we're talking about a win in a week's time.
I certainly hope so, Mike. They desperately need it. Need a win against Huddersfield Town. And listen, this is a team playing well, but let's see if they're for real or not. This is an opportunity. I if Fulham can play as well as they did against Norwich City, they should be able to beat Huddersfield Town. That's just the way I look at it. All right, time to wrap it up. For Mike, Greg, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, Mike. Have a great night.
And you. Cheers, Russ. Into the fire.
your boys. And-